April 17th, 2024. It's 5:23 PM and we will call the meeting of the Central Arizona Independent Oversight Committee for Access to order at this point. We have a quorum. I would begin by, we've sent the agenda out and ask if there's anyone who has a conflict to declare, a member who has a conflict to declare based on the agenda that was circulated.
A point of order, Madam Chair. I think they're requiring that us to take a voice note of who is present of the members. Is that correct, Larry?
Yes, even though we can see you, it's good for the record to have it on the record that the attending members.
Okay, well, I will read off who is present. We have Matthew Moody, Dr. Potts, Summer Mutter, Holly Giesel. Let's see who else is here that I'm. Can everybody turn their camera on if you are a member? Sabrina?
Sabrina, yes.
Sabrina Taylor. And anybody else that I'm missing? So I think we're good. We have six members present. That is a quorum. And thank you. And thank you, Dr. Potts. I'm so sorry for reminding me to do that. Anybody have a conflict? Any member with a conflict to declare? Oh, okay. Who, let's see. Who?
Joel just came on.
Okay, hi. And so we have seven members present and including Joel Thompson. So that's great.
That's good.
All right, we're great. Thank you, Eddie. beginning with the agenda, let's anybody here who on the call who would like to make a public comment? Being no response to that, we will go forward with the agenda. We are going to start with Willa Murphy, who's here from Access. Willa is the Director of Legislative Affairs. You can clarify that topic. I just want to say there are folks that you get the opportunity to work with sometimes sort of serendipitously, and it was a couple of years ago, I don't remember how long, that I met Willa and we got to do some work, and it has been a complete pleasure. We've disagreed, obviously, but never had been disagreeable. And we've worked on some really important pieces of legislation, I think, and topics. It's always been professional, and she's worked very hard to help members of the legislature reach compromises on both sides of the aisle, all the parties, working with staff, working with stakeholders. So it is a pleasure to have somebody at Access like Willa, and I'm so glad that you agreed to come and do this. We're kind of toward the end of the session, but we'd like to have this be kind of a standing item. The legislature is very busy, and mental health, I think it's fair to say, has, particularly serious mental illness, has never been a hotter topic. And I think it will remain next year because of the pressures on the industry and the population growth. And almost every stakeholder group is trying to find solutions, which is challenging, but I find it refreshing because there are not many ostriches left with their head in the sand when it, you know, comes to mental health. So with that introduction, it's really a pleasure, Willa, to have you. So do your thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. That, I so appreciate that. For folks on the call, I want to be mindful of that this will be recorded and transcribed. So we'll try to do my best to make it intelligible as transcribed as well. Thank you so much, Holly, for that kind introduction. I do have slides, but wanted to make sure that that is okay, or if that must go through a certain process, I can do it with slides or without.
It's fine to have slides, and we can make, we will put those slides on our website. I think it's great to have that. And that way, not only members of the committee, but the public can have access to them.
Perfect. Okay. Can everyone see what I'm sharing?
Perfect.
Wonderful. Okay. I am. Okay. All set. Thank you so much again. Good evening, everyone. For the record, Willa Murphy, I serve as the Chief Legislative Liaison for the Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System. So I'm just going to do a brief legislative update in these slides, give kind of an overview of the timeline of session, some factors we're seeing that are impacting this session more than others, and then go into some access initiatives followed by themes and then particular bills of note to highlight. And I will save time at the end for questions, always happy to, but if you have any and you don't want to lose them, feel free to drop them in the chat or jump in. I really have no preference. I'm very grateful for the invitation and heartened to see familiar faces and folks that I've worked with on bills here and on other issues. So I just am excited, and I know it's been a couple of months. So I will just go into the timeline very briefly. As you know, the session, legislative session, begins each year the second Monday of January with the State of the State address, and then shortly thereafter, the executive budget is released, so the governor's budget. From January to March, it's regular committees, so that's when Health and Human Services or Appropriations, et cetera, those have a specific time frame, so they go approximately during January to March. And then after committees end, so they've ended, kind of enter the floor session and budget negotiations period, I guess, as well as non-regular committees. And then the session will allegedly end when the legislature adjourns sine die, which means they end the session. It's tough to predict. That's, everyone is wondering kind of when that's going to be. Last year was a bit of a surprise. It was earlier than expected. Tough to predict this year with a lot of things going on. I'll just note a couple of factors that are impacting this session. So first, as everyone knows, there is a very large budget shortfall. Sometimes that makes negotiating the budget easier, faster. Sometimes it doesn't. We just have to wait and see, and that's being negotiated now. The other factors are, of course, we have a divided government. So one party controlling the governor's office, the other controlling both chambers of the legislature with very tight margins. And then it is an election year. So sometimes that can influence how bills are brought to the floor or kind of if members have primaries, things like that. So just going into the access related bills and budget items very briefly. We did run a little agency bill. It's related to coming into conformity with third-party liability requirements from the federal government. I did just want to note that. There are several key proposals in the governor's executive budget, which I wanted to flag. I'm by no means a budget expert, but the slides do link to the specific pages within both the presentation and then the agency details book for access, if you'd like to take a closer look at those. Of course, they are being negotiated, so it's not set in stone. But those proposals include an increase for crisis 988 funding. Now that some federal funds are being withdrawn, we've seen increased utilization for non-Medicaid individuals. There's also increased staffing to protect against fraud, waste, and abuse, like the schemes that we've seen, and support the providers, right? So make sure that the agency has adequate resources to ensure that not only these fraud, waste, and abuse efforts are sustainable, but also that there's adequate resources to provide assistance, guidance, training to providers who need it. We're also, the proposal also includes increased money and incentives for quality behavioral health providers, as well as certain behavioral health rates, as well as continued funding for our Medicaid Enterprise System, MES. This is the artist formerly known as P PMMIS, but it's the whole kind of IT backbone of Access, and it's about 30, maybe more than that, years old. It's very, very old, uses a coding system that actually is no longer in use. We have to pull coders out of retirement. So that's been an ongoing effort, ongoing funding from the legislature, continuing that. Moving, moving into just a few themes, key themes that we've seen related to Access this legislative session. So first, of course, licensure and oversight initiatives for long-term care, sober living homes, increased oversight of these certain aspects of the healthcare and behavioral systems for some of our most vulnerable members. I think, Paul, you hit it right on the head. This is, folks are really, I think, coming on board, becoming aware. This is becoming a very big priority, an issue, and it's been heartening. I think some of the stakeholder discussions and work that we've done this session has been some of the best I've observed. Haven't been there, you know, as long as other folks, but there's really serious interest and willingness, I mean, to put resources, time, political energy into this, and that's been very encouraging. On the same note, behavioral health system initiatives. This is a kind of a broad phrase, but there's a number of bills that were introduced, particularly as a direct result of, for example, the Joint Legislative Psychiatric Hospital Review Council. So we saw a number of those, which were rolled up, some of them into a bill, which I'll touch on later, but direct results from that council, for example, among others. We also saw the typical types of modifications or expansions to Access covered services. Those would include things like comprehensive dental or removing prior authorization for a pharmacy, things like that. Most of those, of course, are money bills, so they require appropriations ongoing and are part, therefore, of budget negotiations. And then on that topic, we did see the budget shortfall in last week's. For those of you not keeping up with the intricacies of the kind of Joint Legislative Budget Committee and their advisory council, last week there was a pretty key committee hearing, the Financial Advisory Committee, I believe, which set the baseline or kind of where folks are going to go for budget negotiations, still a significant hundreds of millions or billions of shortfall. So that, of course, will have impacts across the board. And then lastly, I just wanted to get into some potential bills of interest. Some of these I'm less familiar with, some of these folks on this call are gonna be much more familiar with, but the slide deck that we prepared has links. So if you click on the bill number, it'll go to the azledge.gov Arizona legislature website. You can look through, see the entire vote history, see who signed in support, against, neutral if you're an executive agency for the most part, as well as just go through quite a bit of documents and floor resources, but a lot of good resources. But I did want to highlight some. So HB 2764, this was probably the most I've ever been in stakeholder meetings. Big shout out to Representative Dunn. This is coming out of the Abuse and Neglect Task Force. Does a number of things that folks have been pushing for a while. And it was kind of stakeholder negotiated with providers, with advocacy groups, with agencies, the governor's office. It was really remarkable to see it come together. And it does a number of things, really increases the ability of ADHS to monitor and provide oversight and accountability for some of these long-term care facilities, particularly as it relates to memory care, which was previously not regulated. Does other things. It creates the vulnerable adult, I believe it's called a task force. It also follows up on recommendations made by the Auditor General's report for the Adult Protective Services system of care. Last year. So this is really a special bill. The agency supported it, and it's just very heartening to see that get signed into law. Next up, SB 1311. I know some folks in this meeting have also been in the, what I would say was also a really good stakeholder process. This is Senator Miranda's bill that she brought folks together. So the health plans, providers, advocates, Mad Moms, the agencies, everyone came together. We're able to work on an amendment that made this bill operationalizable and have no fiscal impact and really, really provides increased oversight. It contemplates a new work group within Access as well as reporting requirements. But that work group is assigned to look into and kind of have accountability, make sure that this initiative does not stop with just this one bill or one report. And happy to go into further details on that. But I think it's just an example of what can be accomplished when folks work together. And so I was very heartened to participate in that. On that same note, SB 1609, Mr. Potts.
Yeah, no, thanks. On 2744, what was the committee was a mandated committee to work together? Is there a committee that's been formed or mandated?
I believe, sorry, 2744.
Yeah, is that what you were talking about? I apologize.
No, I think I apologize if I was unclear. Thank you for asking. The work group that I mentioned is part of SB 1311. Okay. And I think I used the word contemplated, but it's required. So requires Access to facilitate, put this work group together with a number of delineated participants, you know, so community providers, I believe the counties or the courts. Holly, correct me if I feel like I don't have it off the top of my brain, but a large number of folks who are involved in getting some of this data are involved in this system of court-ordered evaluation, treatment, involving individuals with SMI. And that will go into effect on the general effective date. But that is a good question. That work group is required.
And I can clarify a little bit there. Senator Miranda, as part of the process of getting the stakeholders together and getting a compromise and narrowing down what was a very lengthy bill with sort of a list that I would say was aspirational as opposed to easily implemented. We narrowed that down. There were probably 20 something people involved. It focuses on the screening agencies and the process of getting screening done and then getting into ValueWise but data across the system from private insurers as well as with Access products, with Medicaid products in the behavioral health area, and then specifically with the health plans. Mercy and Arizona Complete were represented, the insurance companies were represented. Screening agencies, trying to go around the table and think, but it's a data bill, and it's a bill that was envisioned to focus on clinical outcomes, not counting inputs. So, I mean, we don't, but a lot of reports that you get show the number of patient days, the number of beds, the number of admissions, the number of discharges. Well, that doesn't tell you sort of the critical issues about how many readmissions were there, how many people were discharged without a medication supply, how many individuals who were went and were discharged from one of the screening agencies only to come back three or four times, and how many times did they come back in a defined period of time. So these are, it is one of the first bills in Arizona in the SMI area to focus on those outcomes. And that was a major reason for the bill. Senator Miranda will be spearheading that on an ongoing effort, working with Access to keep the people, keep the stakeholders together, and to have a really good work group to continue to refine the data elements over time that will give give information on clinical outcomes. I think that's Willow. Tell
thank
me.
Thank you, Holly. You saved me. it's a lot. I would encourage folks who are interested, and this was, I believe, signed into law actually yesterday.
Yes.
By the governor. So I put the link to the PDF of the bill in the chat, and you'll see it's comprehensive. So quite a bit contemplated in that bill. But I think I feel Holly, you gave a good summary, I think. I'm happy to go into maybe more details or take a look if folks have questions, or continue with the summary.
Okay.
Thank you. Next up, so this SB 1609, I think I'm not sure if some of the folks most involved were able to join this, but SB 1609 was sponsored by Senator Wadsack, and actually is, my understanding is that it's four bills put together, and those bills were the direct result, again, of the folks who attended and reached out following the, during the interim as a result of the January, and interim, I should say, but the Joint Legislative Psychiatric Hospital Review Council. So it was four bills for the price of one, and focus on a few things. So the first is related to requirements for hospitals upon discharge, I believe, or transfer of individuals with SMI, making sure that their prescriptions are communicated correctly and in contract for Access contractors. Second part focuses on the requirements for peer support specialists. I might be mixing up the order, but essentially puts peer support specialist requirements and adds additional training into statute, and also requires a legislative report related to the agency's efforts to comply with the Auditor General's findings related to failure to provide adequate oversight and accountability to make sure that those folks had the required training certificates, things like that. The bill also codifies into statute certain, I believe, privacy. I would have to check. I'm so sorry, folks. I will check very quickly. That there's one other part, but the last part is an additional report, which requires the agency to report to the legislature as to the feasibility and costs of implementing a real-time survey for individuals with serious mental illness. So think of how sometimes you get a text from your doctor's office afterwards, things like that. This actually, our folks were very excited. Think something we're looking at. It's difficult to operationalize within a Medicaid agency, obviously, but give you that not only real-time quality of care issues, connect these folks to resources if necessary, and get more data. So it's a report on, could that be, you know, feasible, what's the cost, but still exciting. And then I apologize, the additional part of the legislature relates to the disclosure of protected health information by Access's contracted housing program. And again, that was a result of specific stakeholder outreach to the senator. We were able to meet with the senator, work with her staff. I don't know if Rachel Strife is on, but I want to give a shout out is not the right word, but just the amount of work that her, Crystal, but so many others put into that bill and devoted to stakeholder talks on these really, really complex issues. I was so grateful and so impressed on just how immediately they picked it up. And it really is a result of their work. So just wanted to put that out, and it was really incredible working with them. The next couple of bills, I will be transparent. I'm not as familiar with them. They're more on the court order, the COE, so court ordered evaluation side. But I know they're very important to a number of folks on this call within kind of the behavioral health space. And we certainly were keeping tracking them. So the first HB 2744, that's Representative C. Hernandez's involuntary treatment bill related to the rights of guardians and I believe family members. And that was actually signed into law last week. And then we're also watching SB 1309, which relates to mental health evaluations, I believe, who the requirements of what information must be solicited by those screening agencies. That is awaiting floor action in the House. It's a little bit tough to say, again, because the floor sessions are only occurring once weekly, and they have been adjourned fairly quickly, both today and yesterday, without getting to the full business of the chambers. But my understanding is there's no further barrier for that bill, so it should go once it is placed on a calendar. So I believe that is what I had. I appreciate everyone. Apologies, I'm trying to go off memory with the bill summaries is kind of on the last couple of brain cells here, but I just am so grateful. I'm happy to take any questions or take any follow-ups on more specifics at this time.
Thank you, Willa. I think that list of bills reflects probably if those bills all pass, this session will have, I think, transformed some very important operational issues and the way aspects of services are provided to SMI clients, and in particular, the increasing population of folks served at the screening and evaluation screening agencies and the evaluation process. I think the most remarkable thing is that out of the Joint Psychiatric Council, Joint Legislative Psychiatric Council meetings, the bills really address what Senator Wydsack, I think, so appropriately called the carousel of failure. And the thing that these bills have in common, whether they were run by Senator Wydsack, who's a Republican, or Representative Hernandez, Consuelo Hernandez, ran the first bill, her first bill in the legislature is the mental health bill 2744, which passed. And it's her first bill as a first year legislator, and it was on an important issue in SMI. And so she's really happy about that. But Senator Wydsack's comparison that we're dealing with a carousel of failure, I think, is what's so important, because the same people are going around and around, in and out of jail, a hospital, the screening agency, the evaluation agency, jail, the hospital, and it is, if you look at it that way, kind of, you know, pretty tragic. So the focus was on a lot of emphasis on accountability, better data across the board, and on focusing on outcomes on this carousel of failure. And it's also important, Senator Miranda is a Democrat, Representative Consuelo Hernandez is a Democrat, Senator Wydsack is a Republican. They all sit on the Joint Legislative Council on Psychiatric Hospital Capacity. It's really a remarkable bipartisan year, I think, in the terms of mental health issues, given that divided government that Willa described with the Democratic governor and a Republican House. I mean, the chairs of the health committees who are Republicans had to agree for Senator Miranda's and Representative Hernandez's bills to get heard. The final thing I would say is, like on the bill 2744, which was Representative Hernandez's bill, the Arizona Psychiatric Society and Valleywise Hospital, the lobbyist and the members, Dr. Potts is on that legislative committee for the Psych Society. They really provided a lot of very helpful, practical information that resulted in an amendment done over a multi-day period that made that bill much more practical and more easily implementable, if that's a word, which is, I think, really important, and hopefully going forward, they'll continue to be that that kind of involvement. I'm sure that there will be, because the Psychiatric Society is critical. Dr. Olson and Dr. Potts are on the legislative committee. I don't know the exact name, but so it's we always hear it's like watching, you don't want to see how sausage is made. A law is like making sausage. I think this year kind of proved that wrong in some ways. And the Mad Moms had a lot of involvement. Summer is a member of Mad Moms, and they were there just tenaciously at the Capitol, working hard on behalf of the families whose loved ones are served by all of the health plans and all of the access, all the REBAs who are report to access, of course, are funded to act by access. So I think this was a good sausage making year. And when I look at those bills, I'm just like, wow, well, that is kind of a time to reflect on what a really good year it was for mental health in Arizona. And I'm very happy with that. We can't always say that, right? But it's been very positive this year. So did the House and the Senate vote to extend past the 100 day? I haven't followed it.
Okay. It's a loaded question. If they had not, I feel I would know. So I suspect that they have indeed, because I think it is the 102nd day of session. So my colleague Damian Carpenter is on the line. Damian, who is watching. I'm not sure if he knows, but I do believe they extended the session, yes.
Great. So,
yeah.
They extended it today on the floor. There was a lot of stuff going on the floor today, so it was easily missed, but they did in that motion.
Thank you, David. there's a few other things. Holly, I would just want to say, I think you're absolutely right. That's an incredible amount of bills, list the amount of work that folks have put in. I really want to share the gratitude, and just on a personal level, the bravery and vulnerability and strength that we've seen from the Mad Moms, from the families that have been here year over year. So it is it's good to see this list. I think it's important though to remember that the list was constrained, right? Everyone knows there's not funding to go around. We're in a shortfall. I think hopefully in future years, we'll be able to fight to continue and support as an agency the funding that's really needed to support sustainable and systemic changes. That's the reality. Some things do need money. And so not to dampen the party, it's actually remarkable that in light of that, so much work has been accomplished, I think. But just moving forward in future legislative sessions, keeping that in mind. Sorry, Dot, did you have a question?
I just wanted to say thank you. I'm Dorothy O'Brien. I'm the chair of the Northern Arizona Independent Oversight Committee, and was very pleased to be able to just listen in to hear your updates. Our meeting is Monday, so I'll ask Larry for help to make sure we can show the slides. And, of course, you're always welcome to join. I know all your schedules are quite busy. But a mother of a child in ASH right now, she's been in 7 years, and absolutely tragic. And I'm just so grateful to hear some positive movement and how the stakeholders and the families and the systems and the bipartisan collaboration and so on. It's just, as you said, Willa, it is heartening. And thank you. I mean, the untold hours that everybody on this call, you know, puts into this cause, from a mother's heart, thank you. And so I'm going to sign off. And again, I just didn't want to sign off without thanking you. And Holly, as always, thank you for including us, you know, all the chairs and sharing information. And
absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for
thank you.
And speaking about your personal situation, and thank you for the work in northern Arizona. Is Ken on? Is anybody from Southern IOC on?
Hey, Dot. By the way, this is Jack. Good to hear from you. I hope you're doing well. Haven't heard from you in a while. Take care.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be in touch, Jack. Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Let me ask, just if I may, on the legislative issue, Holly, there were 1,750 bills, initiated proposed statutes. 18 have been vetoed by the governor. I think 80 have been signed at this point. Just to give you a sense of numbers if you didn't hear that already.
Thank you. That's
interesting.
Amazing. Yeah, it's amazing. And I don't think that it's bad that a small fraction of all the bills that pop up are actually signed into law, because it's a process, right? And you're working to try to get a really good product. And I think that was something that I was so impressed with this year, was how hard all these different stakeholders were working. And with divided government, the fact that these number of mental health bills, which really are pretty fundamental in terms of what they do, it wouldn't have been accomplished without Willa and the folks from Access, who are always willing to provide help, technical assistance, criticism, support, all of which is healthy and produces the bills that are good enough to make it through our legislature and get signed. And I think that's the best government process, you know, in the world. I won't get all patriotic about it, but I think it's a good thing that the bills go through the process they do. And if you get five bills out or six out and that deal with behavioral health, I think they're going to be good bills. And so I'm really excited about it. All of these bills that passed do, and the reason I wanted this overview, and I'm glad that Willa attended. I thank you again. I'm happy that Mr. Carpenter attended, and thank you and others from Access who may be listening in. We appreciate it. You are our colleagues, and without working with you, we won't any of us get done what we signed up to do. So we appreciate it and look forward to doing it in the future. But this will change, I think, some of the things that we look at in site visits. It will change what we're looking at in IADs, if you see, because it deals with issues like continuity of medication among facilities, what happens at discharge, the information that families, that agencies are going to be in the bills required to listen to when a family member provides it. Dr. Potts taught me long ago as a practicing lawyer that sometimes the most valuable information for his evaluations is the collateral source information. What do the neighbors say? What does the uncle say? What does the teacher? And he would go out and talk to those people in the field when they would agree and could. So that process alone is formalized for the first time in the statute, that the providers, you know, can listen to the family members. Summer's a great advocate of that. And so the information that can be collected from family members and the housing questions. Some of the questions were extremely intrusive, probably people were afraid to give it because the information might get hacked or something. I understand why they were there. It's important to ensure the integrity of who gets housing in a very tight housing supply. But I think all those changes were really needed, and it's wonderful that they're in. Okay, as things happen over the next month or so, I hope Willa can come back and tell us kind of what the final score is as these bills are hopefully more passed, the ones remaining get passed and get signed. And I hope you'll come back in May or June. Let's hope it's done by June or July. Give it a final score.
No, I thank you so much to everyone. I know Damien and I are going to hop off, but please feel free to reach out through Frederica, our wonderful IOC coordinator, to myself. I'm so sorry if you can hear shrieking, but those are cats. and we're just happy to be a resource. I would love to come back, and I appreciate everyone on this call for taking the time and for your thoughtful questions and caring about these issues. Thank you.
Good night.
All right.
Take care of
them. They're fine.
Okay. Let's check with some of the community organizations and partners. Health plan representatives, who's on, and do you have anything to pass on tonight?
Hi, this is Tyson from Mercy Care OIFA. Just couple quick updates, and then I'll turn it over to one of the other representatives. We just did our Connections Conference in Maricopa County last week. It was the 10th year and had record attendance by membership, over 350 on day one, a little bit smaller participation day two, but very well received, and really thankful for the support from Access and other system partners for that event. And then Mercy Care will be hosting a provider health home or case management team forum every quarter on the benefits of using peer and families as part of the treatment team. Our first one will be on May 6th. We also will highlight a peer and family run organization during those quarterly meetings. And I think the last thing that our OIFA team is just really excited about is we did make some really great connections with the members last week at the Connections Conference, and are currently recruiting more members to participate in our member advocacy committees. And so we have several folks who are interested, and we'll be adding those folks hopefully in May when those meetings roll around next time.
Thank you. This is an opportunity for us to ask, please, we would love to have members on this IOC. We have had in the past, but it has been a difficult, it's been difficult to get that and have it happen, have it sustained. So I would just implore, help us out.
Holly, I am more than happy. There's current members who are on some of our committees, but other members who we met last week that I was on the Southern IOC before I came on to the Mercy Care team, and really know the benefit of having membership on IOC. As we're doing those meet and greets and introductions to our committees, I'll make sure they're aware of the IOC in the central region.
Wonderful. And if you have a joint meeting, if you have another meeting, we would love the opportunity to have some folks from the IOC come and pitch membership. We've got lots of people that are so familiar with the system, Matthew Moody, folks who are on the ground, who've been, you know, in the crisis system responding. It would just be invaluable to have some members, and we would welcome that opportunity. Whatever you do, we can do a little we can do a webinar for the members. We can do a little video. Whatever we need to do to get the word out,
Well, Mercy Care will be more than happy. Whatever you send to us, we can share with membership. We will get it out there in the various forums that we participate in.
Great. Thank you.
Hey, and this is Karen Ulick from Arizona Complete Health. If I could piggyback on Tyson. We had a representative at that Connections Conference of Mercy Cares, and really do appreciate Mercy Care convening members and partners, and we're always excited to collaborate and learn together. So shout out to Mercy Care on that excellent convening. We held a community collaborative convening in Yuma recently. We've had a series of these stakeholder member and representatives from the health plan to problem solve. The focus areas are workforce development as well as stigma, and addressing stigma related to behavioral health concerns, and had a very good convening, very broadly attended, and are working on follow-up action items to address both of those areas. Thank you.
Thank you. Is Yuma Southern Arizona or?
Dr. Potts, you have a question?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah, I had a question for Tyson. I've interacted with you before in Southern Arizona, if I recollect, attending some of your meetings. And if I may, Mercy Care manages the SMIs and also Altex patients, correct?
So Mercy Care's line of business includes the REBA contract in Central Region, which is Maricopa, Gila, and Pinal. An ACC plan, which is general mental health, child, and substance use in the Central Region. They have an Altex contract currently in portions of the state. We are a statewide insurer of individuals with developmental disabilities and also children and child welfare.
Let me clarify this, and I think this is appropriate. There is a Altex individual, for example, who has Altex benefits, but also has a serious mental illness, but they cannot receive SMI services, I was told, maybe erroneously, unless they switch totally to SMI status and drop Altex, for example, the ACT team, behavioral health, residential facilities, and the like. And I was told by the Altex person that, gee, you know, it has to be one or the other. Is that correct?
So contracts do work differently across the different lines of business, but Dr. Potts, if you want to reach out to me or my team or have someone who's an advocate for that member reach out, I'm more than happy to have our team assist look into that specific situation, and I'll drop our team email in the chat.
Thanks. No, I appreciate it. Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Potts. And we're going to put that on as a follow-up item because I think it's critical. There is that issue has been discussed at the Joint Legislative Council on Psychiatric Hospitals, because there are, you hit the nail on the head in terms of the either or, which unfortunately patients, human beings are either or, that many of them are both. And so your question really highlights the departure of the maybe the system treatment of that from the reality of how what the human being is living with. So we will put that on and follow up on it. I think it's I know it is a particular interest of Senator Wonsack, and so I think that that will be interesting. And I will make sure that she understands that something from a policy standpoint that has been raised at the IOC and raised by a psychiatrist, which I think is important. Okay, what's any other community partners with updates? Any of the health plans?
Hi, Holly. This is Dawn McReynolds with United Healthcare. I apologize. I have a little bit of a cold, so please let me know if you have a hard time hearing. I did want to update on behalf of all the OIFAs through all the health plans Access OIFA has led us into creation of an OIFA alliance, which means that we are all collaborating together on different initiatives. And one of those initiatives is what Tyson was speaking to. Several of the health plan OIFAs are going out and educating health homes on the benefit of credentialed peer support services, credentialed family support services, which, Holly, I'm not sure how aware this IOC is. The credentialed family support services are extremely underutilized throughout our system. And so we're raising the flag to support family members as best we can and also increase those services. So United Healthcare OIFA has been and is an approved training site for agencies, access approved agencies, set to send staff to come and become credentialed. So we like to kind of promote the credentialed family support portion as well as the credentialed peer support services. Just wanted to let you know, and I believe Karen from AZ Complete Health, her team also has the credentialing ability as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Dawn. That is a really important point. I became aware of the family support services when the Inspector General's, the Auditor General's report came out last year had lots of information about areas that the audit revealed needed to be improved in health plans, assuring that peer support specialists were trained and current. It was a very important finding. And I think the emphasis on credentialing that you've just gone through, I started looking at what the credentialing was, and that was the first time I had come across the family support specialist. I may be the only one. It's very important. What you've said is important, and I want to make a follow up, and let's see in three or four months, before October, September, how that's going. And it really is important. And I think when we're doing our site visits and we're looking at the incident and accident reports, it's important to see if the references, if any, to the need for family support. And that's something that if we can get can scale up our IAD reviews, we might have data that could help you guys as well. So thank you very much. I think this is really, this is important. And thank you for bringing it.
Thank you. Holly, just one more thing before I go back on mute, if you don't mind. We have a lot of behavioral health conferences across the state. This is the season, right? And so when you were asking and making a plea for IOC members, I'm wondering, is there an IOC brochure that can be passed along to us that we can help facilitate the conversation?
Absolutely. I will get you an endless supply of those. We will make sure it's something we haven't done, but that needs probably to be double checked to be accurate. And we will get those to you. And maybe I'll contact you directly for your peers in the, make sure we have everybody in all the other agencies, and get you a supply. It is online, but I think it's nice to be able to have those to hand out. So we will do that.
Thank you. I put my email for you in the chat. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question, if I may, Ms. McReynolds. The families support to go to the births, correct?
They could, yes.
And then the births, are they permitted, are they permitted to take clients out for lunch or go to activities?
I think, Dr. Potts, that would be infused in their treatment plan. I know that, of course, the family would have to be part of that. And I think, Dr. Potts, the issue that we encounter often is that there does need to be an ROI signed from the actual member for their family to receive family support services.
Well, you're going to do that, number one, before you even enroll them for family support services. They have to have the ROI.
Correct.
Okay. Number two, one of my concerns is that the behavioral health, the births have said they are limited to the amount of time family members can take them off campus without getting dinged by Mercy Care.
Oh.
So my question is, you know, this is something that may need to be addressed by you to have a successful program to say, hey, if they are in your family support, you know, and could you look into that maybe to see, you know, are there limitations? So if someone has done the training and wants to work with their loved one, will they be permitted to go? Because I've been told, and the committee has been told, that you're only allowed to have like 4 hours a week off campus with family members, et cetera. Otherwise, payment issues are there. So that's something. Do you have any answer to that? Or do you have any knowledge of time limitations these family support trained individual can take their ward off from a birth?
I don't, but I really appreciate you bringing that. Okay. So I will look into it and definitely report back. That could really affect the family support and the work that credentialed family supports do with the individual and their families. So I will look into it.
Yeah, may sabotage it. So you may want Correct. To look at that. It would be nice to see from your viewpoint, because you may have a great grand vision of family support, but that may be precluded by other restrictions elsewhere.
Especially I can appreciate in the that.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
And Dr. Potts, I think I can clarify. We've had that with several individual facilities, and my understanding, and it may be wrong, because in these facilities there were members both from Arizona Complete as well as Mercy. My understanding was leaving during the day, as long as you're back and it's a planned visit, a planned trip with somebody who is that you're authorized to leave with, is fine. The problem comes if you're spending nights away, multiple nights. But for instance, over a Thanksgiving holiday, a couple of years, we had clients and worked with their facilities where the person could leave for the weekend and go have over Thanksgiving weekend and be back on Sunday. So I think that those were all family members or guardians, and that would be, so that was the answer to that.
If I may, the last couple site visits we had, we were informed by the house managers that patients couldn't leave during the day for more than so many hours in a cumulative period. I'm not talking about the overnight, but thank you. But I just thought Don may want to check into that, because.
Yeah, we will. I think we'll get it clarified also for Mercy. I think it's also important to note that in the behavioral health field, there are urban myths that pervade understanding of the system, in part, I think, because the system is so complicated. If you try to read the AMPM manual, it's not an easy read, and if you read it, it's not exactly clear that anywhere in that manual, and I don't recall that it is, your question is answered. And so I do think there are urban myths that exist. What the information that I provided was in information from Mercy and trying to address a specific situation. But I think as a follow-up item, it would be important to know and clarify from the IOC exactly what the Mercy expects, Arizona Complete expects, in terms of people leaving and coming back during a day from their birth. Also, though, the whole concept of voice and choice means that the individual can walk away from a birth at any point, and they can come back. And if they stay gone for 2 days or for 2 hours or 3 hours or 20 minutes to go get a root beer at the or a, you know, diet pop at the store, they can't be kicked out for exercising certain privileges. That's the heart of voice and choice. It's also, of course, a risk issue that people walk away and they stay gone and they come back maybe having used drugs and so forth, and we see that. So those are issues that we see, but they are part of the system that you have to choose to participate in care. So they are not without problems, but I think we should get a good clarification from the REBUS on exactly what the rules require. That will be helpful in site visits and IAD reviews. Other community partners, health plans who are here. Okay, Matt Moody, MHA.
Yeah, our annual SEED conference is May 2nd. Chick Arnold is our keynote address. So if you are interested in that, MHA of Arizona. .org, but it's going to be our 70th anniversary at MHA this year. So we are celebrating that at SEEDS.
Wow, excellent. Okay, NAMI, anybody from NAMI? There's a question. Joe from Banner. Okay, hi. Okay, so she's in another meeting. Okay. Mad Moms, Rachel is here, is not here, but do you want to give an update, Summer, on Mad Moms? Is there anything going on critically?
I know they're having a picnic this Saturday to include family members as well. They're, you know, if the moms choose to bring their SMI loved one, it's going to be a very like low key, not talking about mental illness, kind of taking that hat off and just allowing members and their families to enjoy each other and enjoy the good weather while we have it.
Great. So. Mad Mom started out with a small group of moms, a handful. Five or six, and Summer was one of the members.
Started as moms going to court for like the ones that like my brother that were that are in jail due to committing crimes, you know, surrounding their mental illness. They saw how many of us moms were, or siblings in my case, going to court alone and sitting there and bearing that weight alone and how lonely it was. And so I really don't even know how I got in touch with Rachel, but Deb Giesling had been going to court dates with me for a while just to sit there and kind of bear witness with you. And as awful as it is and as tragic as it is, I think it was good for the moms to see it, because that's what kind of started the movement, was seeing, gosh, our loved ones are being so greatly failed by community health that they're ending up in the criminal justice system and they're just getting worse. And then we're throwing them back into community health and we're just stuck in, like you said, like what Senator Wadzak calls the carousel of failure, you know, and watching our loved ones slip away and the cruelest way possible, and even dying. You know, we've had a number of deaths just within the last 6 months of SMI individuals due to suicide.
Two in the last week.
Yeah, two in the last week.
So the Mad Moms is, I mention it only because I believe it's a remarkable grassroots organization of mothers, of family members who are in many instances, not always legal guardians, but who are the ones who are trying to navigate and help and are daily involved in the front lines on the behavioral health system. And it's grown. They're now hundreds of families who were members.
It was like 225.
Yeah, 225, and this is in the past 6 months, probably, and they're making contacts in other states. So, as always, Arizona is an innovator, as access was an innovative policy. And I think that the Mad Moms are something that can be a great benefit to the IOCs in identifying problems that they are seeing, which can help inform our site visits and our reviews of IADs. Okay, moving on. Any other community partners that are present and want to bring us up to speed? Otherwise, let's go to our regular items that we talk about. Let's start with the, I've got to pull my agenda up. My phone went away. That wasn't very smart, was it? I think we've got, let's go to the monthly reports from subcommittees. I don't believe there were any site visits. Am I incorrect? Okay, we will move on to the IADs that have been reviewed. And Dr. Potts chairs that subcommittee. Dr. Potts, and I know Summer has some, and there may be other IADs. So would you like to take that item?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of months ago, I spoke, according to Matthew, at length and ad nauseum, mind you, about the dead people found in the backyard of someplace on IAD. And I hadn't, I'm just joking, Matt. But I did have I did get a response back from the from them, which I thought was adequate. And it was the same person was found unconscious at the place. And also, it was a boarding home, if you remember, where someone had two people been found unconscious in the backyard, policemen called numerous times, et cetera. And DHS was apparently conducted an on-site visit on 11/28/23 of that facility. It would be interesting. I think we ought to go look at that facility. And I, frankly, am willing to do a site visit if anyone wants to go with me. I can't do it alone, either Saturday or Sunday this weekend. So that'll cover our site visit agenda item and elsewhere. So it'd be like mid-morning for a couple hours. We could pick a couple sites that you may be interested in, I may be interested in, or anyone else might be interested in. And also, so that's a response. And I had other responses. Frederica was good enough to forward me the other responses to some of the queries I had. Two things. One is I have not heard, nor has the committee heard back from the issue we had with last May with Emmanuel Campus of Care, but that inquiry was not sent until recently. We have never seen an IAD from them. That response was sent on the 20th of March, so we have a few more days until a month has passed. Emmanuel Campus of Care on 99th and Peoria, as some of you may know, is a very, very big long-term care type of facility with dozens of SMI. So we were wondering on a site visit there why they had never done an IAD and they weren't aware of it. So that response has not come in yet. Third issue is that Summer and I were in communication. She has some very interesting cases she's reviewed. And we talked about the procedure and filing an inquiry, and I sent her a couple examples of the responses I had, the inquiry. So any of you who are doing IADs, anytime, feel free to contact me. I will send you, for example, some of my inquiries and responses I've received and the like, just to give you sort of an idea. The procedure we have here is review the IAD. If you have a question on it, like why did the person die? When was the last contact visit? What happened regarding punitive measures or corrective measures, that we need to send that inquiry initially, wait for the response, and then have the committee, then we can decide whether we need to go forward or not. But the inquiry is important to do, and there's a form for that on the ID site. I'd like Summer. She's been diligent in reviewing these cases, and I'm really appreciative of that. I don't know if anyone else has been or looked at them. And then when Summer's done, I'll just summarize. Summer, are you available?
Just give you like a brief description of the IEDs that I've viewed. The first one that was really alarming was in regards to a, she was more of an elderly person, but had no contact with her clinic for about 2 months. But before that, loss of contact, had been very sick, like broke her hip and seemed to be in a not great facility. So wanted to do some inquiry about, is this a licensed facility that she was at with Mercy Care within the REBA, and as to why there was no attempts made over the course of 2 months and resulted in the clinical team finding out months later that she had passed away due to some health issues. So my questions are just going to be a lot of health based, like if you lost contact with her, clearly she wasn't making her medical appointments, and what was done, what efforts were truly made to really find out specifics about this individual. That was one that was pretty alarming. We see that often.
And you know, this is an interesting issue because a related issue is whether Mercy was still receiving payments for this individual who had been dead for 2 months. That is really concerning because they would have been paid for someone who was deceased and they didn't know they were deceased and therefore continued to include that person as an enrolled member for payment. That I think is something that we have to address in this as well. And should deal and should talk to talk to Mercy Care about that. So this is a very sad case, I think, and I'm not sure how it happens that you have no case management with someone with medical problems. I would assume this person was probably getting personal care services.
From what I'm reading, no.
No. Okay. Yeah. So it was the person, and this was in an unlicensed home.
That's one of the clarification questions that I'll be asking. Was the home licensed? But it said group home. You know, that's all it was. And so I wanted the specifics. Was it? You know, sometimes they just list group home, but was it a birth? Was it? Because this person obviously does have an SMI designation.
Great. Okay.
Any Matthew, you had a point.
I have a couple of things, but she answered the question. I just want to make sure we should definitely write a letter about that one.
First, we need to do the inquiry, on the forms they provide, is my suggestion. Sure. Not a letter that a form.
I apologize for using that wrong vernacular. Whatever we need to do to initiate them doing a further investigation.
I
want to make sure we do that.
Agreed.
Okay. And so there's another two cases, right?
There is another one that I'm looking for clarification in regards to a female, younger, was reported that she was saying a staff member was laying in the bed with her in her room to provide comfort for her anxiety. And there was no clarification whether or not that was reported to APS or to the police. And Dr. Potts brought up a great point, like had this female reported other times that potentially other staff members or that same staff member had done it before. So I'm looking for clarification on that, if the proper protective measures were being taken to make ensure that maybe there was some level of accountability held to this staff member, because all it says is the staff member was fired, which concerned me in the sense of was there appropriate legal actions and parameters taken to ensure that the staff member potentially is not just ending up working at another, you know, home just due to lack of appropriate reporting.
And to be clear, the report was that the staff member got in bed and was under the covers,
yes,
with the patient, with the member. So I'm not, this is extremely concerning for obvious reasons. And I want to come back to that. And then the third one.
Intoxication, like an individual, and this is something that I'm concerned because the agency of itself, because this agency has two locations on both the west and the east side. On the east side, some of the members are doing meth, amphetamine at the clinic. On the west side, on this specific IAD, a member showed up to the appointment. It was reported, you know, a sound mind, participated in their medical appointment, but then a member came rushing into the clinic saying that the same individual was passed out outside right by the smoking area and apparently had ingested a large amount of alcohol on site at the facility. So just want to look into that. And really it was just nurse flipped him on the side because the guy was vomiting and was transported to EMS. Well, what is this specific agency doing to protect these individuals, to ensure that substance abuse isn't happening at their clinical site?
Was this a sober living
clinic? No, it was a clinic.
A medical?
One of our largest agencies that is a behavioral health provider.
One can only imagine that if you had your medical appointment and the provider documented that you engaged and you were fine and you participated.
And then obeyed.
And then you OD'd on site from alcohol.
From alcohol.
That's chugging an awful lot of alcohol quickly to end up like that. And it kind of, again, brings me back to the question, how do you assure the integrity of the medical record that reflects that? I mean, it doesn't to me seem possible that in this, assuming the timeline is correct and the person's seen and then has their appointment and then goes outside and not long thereafter is found passed out from intoxication, that I don't know how that happens, but we will investigate.
Well, let me ask Matthew, has anyone else reviewed IADs? I would like to mention Matthew, you seem to have. Yes,
well, I don't have anything to report. I have three questions, but so that was an SMI clinic, you're saying?
Yes.
Summer?
Okay. Clinic.
So I definitely want to bring Joel into these discussions a little bit more because, you know, he was a clinical coordinator. But, you know, with my SMI experience, I would say that, you know, like they were in the building drinking alcohol, like that's what we're saying, or because they could have just been outside getting, you know, chugging a bottle. I've seen stuff like that before.
What I saw, they were just right outside by the smoking area. And you know, it's steps, the smoking areas are steps away. At this specific clinic, I know that the smoking area is literally maybe a wingspan away from the door to the clinic. You know, they're not like in a designated quarter of a mile down the road or even 500 feet from the clinic. And the fact that, you know, a member is, you know, running and rushing, saying, you know, so and so's vomiting and passed out, knocked out by the smoking area. And I'm just like, oh, geez. But the way that the IAD was written seemed that it was in a very short amount of time between seeing the provider and then being outside. So I was like, dang, they're chugging alcohol at the clinic. What's going on here?
Running it in my mind, I thought initially you're talking about like for something like a residential facility or group home. And it's like if they snuck alcohol in there and then were drinking on site, that's a huge issue. They should probably could have gone out and said, like, hey, dude, please stop chugging 40s in front of the clinic. So it'd be a little bit different if they're, you know, doing behavior outside of the clinic and not inside the clinic. I think you're 100% on that you should, we should send in the inquiry. Sorry, Jack, if I'm not using the right words. But whatever, we should escalate that one and have it re-reviewed, I guess is the right word. Does that track with you, Joel? Did I miss it?
Yeah, no, if I may, I've seen that at clinics myself. And so one of the issues I would ask is how often security are going out and checking on the smoking area, because the areas around law clinics, people smoke, use drugs, or smoke or drink. So the how frequently is security, and what's the corrective action? Is, you know, maybe there needs to be a corrective action, but this is like any Circle K by the end of the bus lines, or it's a homeless clinic with people who the good percentage have drug problems. That's a good point, Matthew. But yeah, I think follow up and inquiry is great. Matthew, you had two other points you wanted to make.
I just want to make sure I didn't miss it. Joel, did that track with?
Yeah, I think that tracks with my thought. The only other question in my mind is, and I have no idea how this works, but is the smoking area part of the lease agreements for where the SMI clinic is? Like, is that under the purview? Is that off, technically, like offsite? That also like would impact the way that I would think about it, but that would be kind of the only other question in my mind.
And I think it would be useful. Maybe we can get a picture. We can get a photograph of that clinic. That's a great point. One of the things. Any other IAD reviews?
Yeah. Let me just mention to close for the IAD report that it is interesting what we see, and I think it's kind of fun. And as I mentioned this summer today, the majority of IADs, I believe, are handled well, but there's some for which we are looking at a pattern, and we can also click on the site. I believe there's a way, and I think Frederica has told us before, there's a way you can actually see the site. So if we see a lot of IADs coming out of these sites, it can give us reasons to visit the site. There's no reason we can't take runs and our visits to the clinics during the week also as a couple of us. But anyway, so no, thanks. It's great to see someone having reviewed IEDs.
On the IED issue,
Real quick, Holly, we can even view the number of IEDs on a specific member. I've been paying a lot of attention to that because I want to see, like, okay, this specific member is repeatedly having IADs and they have 40 IADs within the last 6 months. I'm like, how are they being served? Where are they? Where are a bulk of that? Are they hospitalizations? And if they're always being hospitalized, then what's going on with the clinic? Like, what is the clinic doing to support that member to stay out of hospitalization? So I'm paying attention. Making sure to click, you know, the member IAD history on an individual. And if there's a ton, then I'm going to start doing inquiries into, you know, why are there so many IADs on this specific SMI member? And, you know, why are there so many hospitalizations? And what kind of status are they on, you know, supportive, ACT teams, that type of a thing.
That's a really important question, I think. If you see the member having IADs written at their birth, at the clinic, at the hospital, at here, at there, then something's wrong with that placement. Something's wrong with
the medication.
Something's wrong with the treatment plan. And if those IADs continue, it's only going to be a matter of time until there's an assault, you know, somewhere, and then the member gets arrested. So I think that those are that kind of consistency and looking for patterns is wonderful. Thank you, Summer, and that's great. Keep it up.
Matthew had a point.
Three things. One, Joel and I are going to meet on Tuesday, and I'm going to train him on the IAD process. So I'll make sure that he knows how to do everything. There's two groups of changes that I've seen I've done this for 3 months now. the internal referral, can someone explain what internal referral means when it says provider's internal referral? Does that mean Access saw something and wanted to look at it?
You broke up a little. Could you rephrase that?
Yeah, no, Frederica might be able to address the issue of what the IRF is, which means internal referral versus NIAID. Frederica? Yeah,
it's when a hospital or like something on inside gets a review of something that wasn't reported. So like on hospitals generally are the ones that do internal referrals. So it's an IED, but it's something that they saw while they were in the hospital or something that could have been reported to them. Say a member comes into the hospital and they report something to the hospital, then they can do an internal referral.
Like quality control would be my guess.
I just don't understand the verbiage here. Internal to what? Like,
it's just called internal because it's coming from not necessarily from the person's care team or somebody that was providing the service when an incident happened. It could be, again, like, let's say a child goes into the hospital and they report something to hospital staff, then the hospital would has a responsibility to report that to Access. So it comes through as an internal referral.
So like APS referring, getting referral because of child abuse, the emergency room doctor does an internal referral to APS or CPS.
They'll do it to Access.
Right, but I'm talking about.
Let me give you some, I can give you some examples. A patient comes in from a birth to the hospital, having had a fall and an unwitnessed fall with a head injury, and they determined that the patient had been missing all day at the birth, came back, and it was found outside the birth. Comes to the hospital, and the hospital doing the intake figures out, okay, this is an unwitnessed fall from somebody who's at a birth but was outside the birth, and they start working the patient up, and the patient is lights up every tox screen on the UDS and blood test. So that the hospital writes an internal referral to Access on that, or to Mercy. That's a typical sort of issue. Or comes in, a patient comes in with unexplained trauma, and then they refer that internally for investigation. So that, and I think that, I'm glad you had one of those. I had not thought about them. We get involved sometimes when there's a criminal case that arises out of it. But if there's an internal referral, I think we should then, on one that we're going to do an inquiry on, we should do an inquiry on what was the result of the internal referral review. Because that may be where you get more information. And so that's a very good point there.
There are often QOC reviews also that are results of the investigations, which you'll see when you go through that, right, Holly?
There should be, although the quality assurance process has changed so dramatically in Arizona hospitals. I'd have to pick, and each system is different.
I'm saying they're on the form, they're on the portal we go to. No, the QOC, anyway, there are some higher level reviews that are on the portal that we can evaluate. I'm just saying that is there for some, as you were suggesting. Frederica had a question or comment.
I think she just gave a thumbs up.
No, I was just giving you the thumbs up to what you said, Dr. Potts. That's okay. Correct.
Okay. Matthew, I'm willing to meet with you and Joel or be available if you wish to, if I can help, because as chairman of the IAD stuff, I will be glad to do so.
Okay. Yeah. The other question I had was, I noticed this month going through these a significant increase in the different providers that are putting in IEDs now. So I'm seeing names I haven't seen before and companies I don't know. I'm seeing different providers that rarely did them doing them more. And so it specifically Solari, the crisis line, started putting some in for crisis calls. So that appears to be a change. And I'm wondering if, you know, Frederica, you have any idea of were there new procedures or policies implemented on IADs? Did you reinforce, not you specifically, but Access as an organization or Mercy Care, did they reinforce that these things are supposed to be happening? Do you have any insight on that?
I don't have insight to that.
Could I ask you to follow up on it?
Yeah, if you send that to me in writing so that I can get the request correct, I can send it up to who it needs to go to. I'm not sure exactly, so I'll have to check with leadership, but sure.
Okay, do we need a motion for that?
I don't think you need a motion. You could just send it to me so that I don't get your words mixed up.
Is the committee okay with me doing that?
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah, I guess I just wanted to tell the committee that I noticed that we did not used to do IADs very rarely on the crisis line because we typically didn't, one, necessarily know their SMI, know who their provider was. We typically weren't the last people to speak with them. We never discovered someone died, right? Like, we're on the phone, so we don't ever, you know, find a body or anything like that. So that keyed off something in my head. And then there's some of these other providers that I just haven't heard of before. The internal referrals were in there. I hadn't seen that many before. I'm just wondering if this is part of an initiative to increase.
It's a good question because I hadn't seen either the crisis lines. It's like, that's an interesting issue. Whatever.
Yeah. Also, and not to say that we should or shouldn't have, we didn't do it, and it wasn't, so we never found the person. So, but there's also a company called Hopes with two S's, and then I see Hopes Bethany Holmes, or like FBHH. There's these births that I just really haven't seen them before. So I was just really curious as to why that was a pattern. So I'll send Frederica an email about it. That's everything I had tonight.
Why don't you copy the rest of the committee on the email?
Absolutely do that.
That way we're all on the same page. Just a thought.
So, Frederica, I have a couple of questions in trying to think about how to have our IAD process be as productive as possible and our review process. We are required by statute to, it says we shall visit special assistance individuals. And we've talked about this before. We need to be able to generate, whether it is from the portal we are in now or through a monthly request to Access, we need to be able to generate a database of all the special assistance individuals. If we can't do that, we can't fulfill our statutory obligation that we shall visit these people, because it's hit or miss in the current database as to whether we can't identify them. So how do we do that?
I know we've talked about this several times before, and again, the FTP server is where all of that is housed. So right, you have to go into the FTP server and gather that information, because it is protected information. There's different ramifications as to where that information can live. So the FTP server is a server that is, you know, password, all that kind of stuff. So not everybody can get access to the FTP server.
I understand.
That's where that information lives.
I
don't have any jurisdiction other than uploading the special assistance reports when they come to me on the 25th of each month, which I've done consistently since I've been in this role. I was in talks with the OHR team, who is the team that mans that report and is the team that sends that report to me. I'm willing to go back to them again to see if anything has changed. But from what I was told is that they are providing the report as they should, and that is through the FTP server. So from that point, the information is readily available to whomever accesses it in the FTP server.
Okay, but I understand that. How do we use the FTP, the server that we, how do we use the FTP server that we have access to?
Oh, yeah, sure. Sure. Whomever needs.
Let me finish. Sorry. Other than searching every item in the database to which we have access to look for special assistance individuals, how do we access the identity of the IEDs on special assistance?
Are you referring to in the it's in the FTP server? Is that what you're asking? I'm not sure what your question is. How do you identify? They're all listed under your region. So
no. If I may clarify, I think what we have is a parallel conversation here. Number one, as Holly knows, and we all know, there is an FTP server, which is separate. To me, I've been locked out for a long time, that has an Excel spreadsheet of those who are special assistants. Those special assistants, that Excel spreadsheet can be sorted by zip code, by address, blah, 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 blah. But what Holly is asking, and I agree, in the past, we had a drop down on the portal that permitted, that said special assistance, that category. And I thought that the committee had voted previously to make a formal inquiry as to why that special assistance drop down IAD list, like they have SARs, seclusion restraint, they have non-SMI, they have, you know, child and adolescent. And we used to have special assistance, so we could go through that. They eliminated that. So I think that's what we were asking for months ago. But right. I don't know if the committee ever formalized that request and got a formal response. Well, but we previously did vote on that to say we wanted to have a formal request made to access as to why they did and why they could not again implement a drop-down list, separate category for special assistance SMI. Is that correct, Holly?
It is. We did request, and Frederick has told us, well, the data's in there, you have to look for it.
It's not. It's only in the FTP, so we need to ask on the general portal. So I don't think we need another motion, but that's what we have to send a formal request from, I would suggest, to Larry Allen, saying, why was it taken out? Number one. Number two, we wish to have it replaced.
I guess on discussion there, I don't want us to try to figure out through multiple layers why we don't have access to the data that we are required by statute to have. In order to fulfill, it says, we shall make site visits to special assistance members. I'm not interested really in understanding why access took it away from us. Maybe there was some great reason took away the access. All I want is access to solve the problem, which is the data is no longer in the portal to which we have access. I am requesting, and I'll send it in a formal request to Larry, but I am requesting access to provide us with a special assistance list. Not the name, you don't have to give names. I want access to the addresses where special assistance members reside so that we can comply with our statutory mandate.
I hate to, we have that available to us. The Excel spreadsheet, I'm being very clear, and Frederick, tell me if I'm wrong. The Excel spreadsheet gives a name, gives the address, gives us a guardian, gives a phone number, gives a clinic. It gives a name and special assistance. We have that information. We do not have the special assistance broken out as to IEDs when there's a report of an IED as we used to have. But that FTP gives us full access to the name, date of birth, and all the information you ever want. That's available for special assistance and the address. It doesn't, however, there's no, we used to have an IED. So if a special assistance, if there was an IED about right. a special assistance patient, we used to say, hey, this one was abused or potentially abused, then we could look at that. But right now, that Excel spreadsheet is fully available on the FTP server for all of us. Am I correct, Frederica?
That's correct.
Okay.
It's there.
But how do we get the IADs on special assistance?
That's the question we asked 3 months ago and 5 months ago. That we used to have a subcategory, as Summer knows, you drop down, you want to screen these. It used to have one for special assistance. That was deleted, and that's what we need to inquire about formally, because we talked about this for 5 months and never had a letter written as we passed motions on that to go saying.
Okay, I don't know if that's, I'm not sure that's accurate, but I'm not sure
it is
accurate. But, and I'm not going to get into an argument in this meeting about the number of months or the number of times. All I'm trying to do is to make sure that we are all clear that what we're asking for is the ability to look at IAD special assistant, IADs written on special assistance members. Are we all in agreement on that?
I second that motion.
Well, it's, okay. Are we in agreement on that? Okay, everybody's nodding affirmative. Okay, I will send a letter attached to an email to Larry and ask that access make available to us in whatever format is appropriate. Access to a list of special assistance members as part of the IAD database that we have.
I suggest you say, as we previously had for 5 to 10 years, that was a breakdown. And as Frederica told us, for some reason, they delineated that in the last year. So I would say, as was done before, so they know it's not like we're reinventing the bloody wheel. Does that make sense, folks?
Well, I don't know that the people we're talking to now know what was there.
They can look it up, Holly. And for God's sake, I got printouts of it. So they know what's there because we brought it up with Frederica before. And she said to us that for some reason they deleted it. That's all. I remember that.
Frederica, can you, are we asking this in the correct way?
I mean, the conversation that was had when CJ was still around, when we were both in still in OHR, that's been well over 2 years now, maybe even three. There was conversation in regards to that list in the portal, and why it was going to be removed. And it was mainly because that section that brought up the special assistance had a lot of user error, meaning there were a lot of reports that came up where the members weren't necessarily special assistants, so it wasn't a true report. So CJ did a training, and everyone agreed at that time to remove that, and that's why it was removed from my recollection. Okay. And that was, again, well over 3 years. So
I agree.
You guys put it in writing and I'll take it back again. I've been in conversation with OHR about it, but there's nothing, you know, formally requested. So I can't really, there's not a lot I can stand on with it. And again, it's not in my wheelhouse. It's just, I'm the reporter. So when I discussed it, the information that is given is that it is here. It is available to whomever has access to the FTP server. So the information is for the special assistance members is there. Now, what you're asking for today is a little bit different. You're wanting it to go back into the portal and be attached to IADs. So that's a different request. And you guys go ahead and put that in writing, send it over to Larry. Larry will get it to me and then I'll get it to who it needs to go to for a response.
Okay. My recollection was that there were historically problems with the accuracy of addresses of individuals in the special assistance. When we had the drop down, we found consistently that 25 to 30% of the members who were showing up on the special assistance list when we made site visits, in fact, weren't there, and in many instances hadn't been there.
Yeah, those are two separate issues. One was they were not in the IADs, though. They are two separate issues. The one was the list was inaccurate, clearly, because they had moved on. So that was one issue. You're right, Holly. And because it wasn't up to date. The second issue was the population of the populating the special assistance specifically in the IAD portal. But the you're right, because the portal doesn't identify names or addresses.
Right.
So we would group, when we meant site visits, we would go to places that we knew the patient John Doe was listed at so-and-so homes on Jones Street, and he wasn't there. So that was a real issue. That's a separate and distinct issue from them taking away the populating the IAD specifically under special assistance. But you're right.
Wish I had the portal. Are we able to pull down the special assistance? Jackie, I think you said there's no way in the FTP portal that we have that we can identify special assistance members by address.
No, FTP is a separate FTP. Portal. You're mixing the portal. We have two portals. There's one FTP, File Transfer Protocol portal, which is much more secure, where right. Every name and every address is there. Under the IADs, that's the normal portal we go in that Summer just went on, and Matt's going to teach Joel about, doesn't give any names at all and rarely gives addresses, but it gives just the basic information. So totally separate, and right. You have to log in separately with different, yeah.
Okay. And that doesn't help us identify site visit locations or assistance site visit locations.
It doesn't help identify special assistance people for whom there may be an IAD. That is absolutely correct.
And it doesn't give us addresses. It doesn't identify special assistance and doesn't give us addresses of special assistance.
Well, under the Protection Act, to my understanding, the portal, drop-down portal, with the IADs, the addresses is redacted because that's personally identifiable information. Under the other portal, which gives a list, it's just a list of every special assistant patient. It does give addresses. So if we want to visit a place that has special assistance clients, we can visit them.
Okay.
But there's no linkage between special assistance and IAD, the two All different right. portals.
Okay. Then until we try that system and exhaust it, I'll Frederica, I'm not going to send a request. We'll see if it's able to be workable, if we can make it work. And
I will draft the request, if I may, at the chairwoman, because we need to get I think we all agree that the IADs, we should have a special assistance drop down, a subcategory And I'll send that to you in the committee because we've talked about this and we need to get a formal response, I believe. And I know we voted on it before. We do the portal is the FTP is a good Excel spreadsheet. We can always go to homes where people are supposedly at, but that doesn't mean where there may be problems. That's the issue we're trying to link. Does that make sense to the rest of the committee? I don't mean to confuse people, but Joel, Matt, Summer.
Well, let me just say this, Dr. Potts. Draft what you think we should send, and we'll look at it at the next meeting. That makes sense for okay. you to do that. I'm not convinced, based on what I've heard, I'm now not convinced that we can't do the special assistance visits, based on the information that's
available.
And so that's all I'm concerned with.
Okay.
Because all I want to do is be sure that the one thing the statute says we shall do is site visits to special assistants, and we got to do that. And I've not been very successful in increasing the number of site visits beyond the few that we used to do each year. And so that's something I know we all want to do. Okay. Matt, follow-up visits, moving on, follow-up items on the agenda.
So we had sent two letters to Access, one regarding the MMIP, basically like how they are monitoring and tracking MMIP, that stands for Murdered and Missing Indigenous People. So we sent one letter about that, and then we also sent a letter where Rachel had gathered releases of information with concerns about how hospital discharges are being completed with medication. So we received responses on both of them. Neither of them really. Let me just take a moment. Regarding the MMIP stuff, the letter basically says we don't know if we can answer your question because of a certain revised statute. And they respectfully requests additional time to ensure the appropriate response will be provided to all, is response sooner if at all practicable. And then probably that's a lawyer word, I'm assuming, practicable. So what I'd like to do on this one, and for this letter, I would just like to request, like, Frederica, if you needed a writing, let me know. But can you ask somebody when they anticipate having this done? And when is like a drop dead date that they can guarantee they're going to have an answer on this one for? Because basically the letter just says, thanks for your request. We don't know for this law if we can answer you. And then we will request additional time and get it to you as soon as possible. But I'd like to know if they have any update. Well, let me ask this. I'd like a progress update from somebody at Access. That's what I would like. I'm at the committee's mercy on that one, but that's what I would like to request.
Is that the I'm sorry to interrupt. Is that the MMIP one you're asking about?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
And I don't know, can they give us an update every 2 weeks or something like that so that we know what's happening?
Yeah, I'll put all of this. I'm going to put it all in writing for you.
Okay, great. So, and I can share the letter with everybody. I didn't know what the portal call was on that, Holly, but I'm happy to share this letter with everybody. On the other discharge one, on the hospital discharge one, they answered all of our questions. I don't know if any of us have really sat down and looked through it, so we should probably have a meeting for the subcommittee to go over it. But all the questions we ask about is responsible for ensuring that clients have refills on their medication. It requires that the REBA engage in ongoing oversight and monitoring of birth providers. So that's it's like it didn't even like answer the question. So it's very much like go look at the AMPM, go look at the AMPM. But they said that they have referred. In response to your request to open an investigation into 8 specific events, Access has requested Mercy Care investigate these events for the five access members listed. Once we receive information on Mercy Care, and then they will look to see what they can provide, if whatever. So anyway, the question on this one is, can we get an update from Mercy Care on what the investigation is, how it's going, how long it's going to take, so that we can kind of keep track of that?
Yes. So the Mercy Care update for the five members that are listed?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can just actually use this thing. So we got responses, which is great. I was happy about that. They are thorough and well written. I can say that. This is the last sentence there. I just put it in the chat for everyone else to read it. But yeah, we're basically just not holding pattern until we get more information.
Matthew, if I may, it really would have helped me as a member to have seen the original letter that went out, and then I've seen the response before the meeting to have been sent out, maybe as an attachment or something else, the agenda, because that way I'd sort of be up to speed more. And so whenever, you know, I just think I know what we voted on all that, but it'd be nice to see that. And maybe I missed it in the mail, but I'd know what you're talking about rather than just having to recollect. That's all.
Sure, that's fair. That's just trying to summarize it real quick. I'll send. I don't know what the protocol is. I wrote the letter directly to the access director. I received a response. I don't know if I can give that to the public. Yeah. I don't know.
Send it to everyone you want. I think the committee, it just helps it would help me as a committee member to understand the context, what the response was, what the letter was, what bullshit they're feeding us.
Okay. What we'll do going forward is for things we're going to put on the agenda, we'll get that in advance, and we can send the letters out with the agenda to the members.
Thank you.
So we have all of that as a package. Does that make sense? I haven't seen them, but that's fine. I'm glad Matthew got them and followed up, and we've got a good report. And we're way over time. We've got to end this. It was long, but we have great presentation at the outset. So.
That's all I had. We just need to get those responses. Yeah, I'll send an email out to everybody with the original letters sent and the responses.
And then also, I want to have a conversation next time about how we can speed up the IAD review process, because I'm a little concerned that when we go review the IADs, if every member is reviewing IADs and every member sending out inquiries, and then we come back and we're relying on each member to track whether there's a response and bring the inquiry and the response back to the committee. So Dr. Punch, your point there about wanting to see things in advance of when we talk about it, I think we need a way to short circuit the inquiry process in our discussion.
I agree, and we discussed that earlier, and that's why we have chair people of the different committees. So if there's an IED issues, the members of the committee or anyone who wishes to discuss it, let's bring it to me and let's discuss it, or let's bring it to the committee, a subcommittee on IED, so we can then hone down what we need to bring forward and most critical ones bring to the committee. That's why Matthew, I think we had the subcommittees to begin with. So we'd go through someone who would be a funnel. And frankly, I don't give a damn if being the funnel. I hate doing IADs, but I think I have more knowledge than most. So that's the goal we should have. And Summer and I talked about that earlier. So any IAD issues, come to me. And my sense is it shouldn't go on the agenda. You just have a report about IEDs. You have a report in CIFA. The CIFA is a chairperson, gives a report or defers to someone. But that would cut it down. Does that make sense?
Well, it cuts it down as long as we can turn it all around within a month. I think we need to think about that.
Well, I guess that's the role of the chairman, isn't it? The report back there if there's a question, and I will do so.
Well, thank you. I'm concerned about the I'm concerned about the turnaround time, but we can think about it and see if we need to do anything to streamline it. Okay. Let's see. Where's Sabrina? Is Sabrina on?
We're over time. She had to drop off.
Yeah. Do we even have a quorum at this point? I think we do.
Yeah, we do.
We still okay. do. Thank God.
Okay. I apologize. We're not going to go past 7 o'clock on this. It's not fair to people. We went over and I should have eliminated issues on the agenda because I wanted us to know what was going on at the legislature with things that I think are going to affect the scope of our work and issues and so forth. Okay, any other business?
That was very important to do, Holly, and I think it's worth going over to at different times. We only meet once a month, and I thank you for doing that.
I agree.
Any other business? Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Frederica, as always, for helping us out. And Karen, thank you for hanging in there. And Dawn, everybody, I really appreciate you doing that. And with that, anybody want to move to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Bye.
Aye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thanks, bye. Have a good evening.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks. Good night.
Be chairman of something and fun little something and all.
Oh my gosh, you're like, can we just all bring our shit?
I see, I think that's the thing. I'm gonna start, maybe I'll just talk to people and see. No, I'm just